Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John.
And I'm Alex.
And we have no Jake this week, unfortunately. We're going to instead have a little bit more of an off-the-cuff episode. Alex brought up the other day that he was considering whether it's time to change Korvald to a new commander.
Yes. So a recurring theme amongst the three of us is, as John refers to it, is a tale of two Korvalds. Both Jake and myself play a Korvald landfall deck that go in slightly different directions than they traditionally do. When the new Omnath is spoiled, I immediately got excited because landfall is the traditional theme of Korvald, and I'm just like, how can I make this better? And I saw Omnath spoiled, and I was like, wow, that's powerful, if not a little, you know, reined in by the fact that Omnath has a limitation to his abilities. So to get everything kicked off, I'm going to go ahead and read Omnath, and we'll go from there. So Omnath, Locus of Creation, is a 4-mana 4/4 elemental. It costs 1 red, 1 green, 1 white, and 1 blue. When Omnath, the Locus of Creation, enters the battlefield, draw a card. So that's positive in and of itself. Landfall. Whenever land enters the battlefield under your control, gain 4 life. If this is the first time this ability is resolved, this turn. If it's the second time, add 1 red, 1 green, 1 white, and 1 blue. And if it's the third time, Omnath deals 4 damage to each opponent and each planeswalker you don't control. So, downside is it's
And on the fourth turn? And on the fifth one?
On the fourth turn, nothing.
And on the sixth one?
You ramp.
Got it. So, Omnath has some interesting options built into it. And I think what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about some of those options. We're going to compare it to your current plans with Korvald. But before we do that, why don't we just talk about lands matter in general? So a lot of times we kind of shortcut that to saying landfall, but that's not always the best way to put it, because there are decks that do not use quote-unquote landfall payoffs to get their lands matter wins. And landfall as a mechanic, if you're going to go searching through Scryfall or Gatherer and you type in landfall, you're going to miss some critically powerful cards as well.
Definitely. So landfall, as most people recognize it nowadays, is simply an effect that whenever a land enters the battlefield, trigger X effect. So, when you run decks that specify landfall, or cards that specify landfall, it rewards you for doing something you want to do anyways. I want to play lands. It'd be really cool if I drew a card, or created a 1/1 token when playing a land. And, for the most part, lands are hard to interact with. Every now and again, you'll find, you know, the land destruction player will target your lands, or you'll come across like the, you know, the one-off Blood Moon or Back to Basics to kind of mess with lands, but for the most part, lands come into play and they stay there, unless of course you sack them to a big angry dragon.
On the other hand though, there are some weaknesses to lands matter as a theme. So in general, the ramp is cheaper than the payoffs, so there's that mismatch of timing. You kind of, on one hand, want to save your ramp spells for after you've hit your payoff, so that way you can put more lands onto the battlefield and get more value out of your payoffs. On the other hand, you want to be able to get enough mana on the field to get your payoffs in a reasonable amount of time. You've naturally thinned your deck as a result of trying to reach the mana you need to play your payoff. And there have certainly been times when people have gone to search their deck to resolve a ramp spell, only to realize, well, I guess I'm out of basics now.
Definitely. In my Korvald list, I don't run the full gambit of fetch lands that I possibly could, because I have on multiple occasions in early iterations of the deck failed to find. And black, and or Jund, I should say at the moment, lacks ways of getting lands back into your hands, with the exception of things like Mina and Den, or a handful of other random bad cards that exist out there where they bounce lands back to your hand. Fun fact on this note is that's something that blue handles actually quite well, so that's one of the appeals of it. But failing to find is a big thing for landfall decks, because if you have no more lands to play, your engine pretty much just stops dead.
And mentioning blue, something we'll talk about in a couple minutes is that when you're trying to enable landfall with exploration type effects, exploration being that classic green enchantment for a single green mana, which reads, you may play an additional land on each of your turns. These type of effects are very powerful to allow you to very cheaply ramp ahead and enable additional landfall. The downside is that this tends to be fairly slot inefficient and has some pretty significant diminishing returns. In general, each additional land drop you have after the first one tends to go down in value, because you're quickly going to run out of lands in your hand to keep up with the amount of land drops that you have access to.
Exactly. So, effects that allow you to essentially recycle land drops, or get lands off of the battlefield into the graveyard and recast them through effects like Crucible World, Ramnag Excavator, and my favorite card in Magic, Life from the Loam, definitely make an impact to it. So,
the other issue we sometimes run into is payoffs are often coming down, quote-unquote, a turn later than you would expect based on their mana cost. For example, taking a look at something like Rampaging Baeloths, you'd look at it and see a 6-mana cost. But in general, you really want to play it when you can get your 7th land drop so you can immediately get the value of it, like it were any other end of the battlefield creature. This is a problem faced by quote-unquote pure landfall payoffs, but it is one to keep in mind that the payoffs are a little bit more expensive than they look at face value, particularly if you want to get the value from them immediately.
All right. Now, on that note, we'll dive into what makes Korvold in terms of landfall in the Jund color wheel, and then what kind of makes me want to go from a Jund lineup to Sands Black, because I don't know what the actual name for Sands Black is. So
I'm pretty sure we're just sticking with Sands Black at this point.
All right, so diving into it, we have the pillar of any landfall deck, and that is green. Both in Korvold and Omnath, green is going to be the centerpiece of what the deck wants to do. The original Omnath is mono-green, so it only makes sense that we stick in that vein.
Yeah. There's too many ramp cards to count in green between the original Rampant Growth, the many variations of Sky Shroud Claim, Explosive Vegetation. This is one of the reasons why later versions of Omnath were so powerful. There were so many ways to get lands out of your deck and onto the battlefield. Green is really good at this.
It is. The one weird point is I don't actually run any of those effects in Korvold. As it stands, Korvold as a landfall deck is designed to just get lands into play, and then sack them, and then replay them, and then sack them, and then replay them, and then just accrue general value through there. A majority of the lands I run in Korvold are utility lands. They all have a purpose when they come in. So while some basics exist, most of them are dual-typed, and I just want to be able to fetch what I need to fetch and then get lands that kind of help me answer the board. Things like Glacial Chasms, things of that nature.
Right, and one of the advantages of Lands Matters decks that we didn't delve into yet is that you really get a lot of value out of your lands, and you can generally find the lands you need to answer a problem, which means that you're a little bit more slot efficient than the deck may appear otherwise. You can have an effect, an answer, on your lands instead of using it in another slot elsewhere in the deck.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, is that you get to the point where it's like, all right, I'm going to run 36 lands, and 36 lands is good. And then you're going to do, I'm going to have the rest of your spell slots. And it goes, oh, I don't need that as a spell slot. I can put that effect on the land. So you add another land there. So at what point in time you get to the point where you are almost a bit too land heavy in terms of, I've got these lands that can do things, but lands for the most part aren't as like to the point as their spell counterparts. So Phyrexian Tower is a good example. I have one where, not Phyrexian Tower, Vorul Stronghold, sorry. Vorul Stronghold is a way for me to play a land that allows me to recur creatures from my graveyard to the top of my deck and draw them again. Powerful effect for a land, hard to interact with in the fact, unless you've got land destruction or something like Stifle to stop the effect from going off, but it has to wait a turn. Like, I have to play the land, I have to have the mana to tap for its ability. Card has to go to the top of the deck, I have to draw it and then recast it. Other cards that exist out there that just do it more efficiently in the form of spells, things like Eternal Witness, Noxious Revival, Phyrexian Reclamation, all of those in a different vein do it more efficiently than lands do. However, lands are hard to answer.
And I noticed that in your Korvold deck in particular, we had talked before about exploration effects, and you're running several of them. The classic one we discussed before was Exploration, but there's also the original commander for it, Azusa, Lost But Seeking. For 2 and a green, you have a 1/2 human monk who simply says you may play 2 additional lands on each of your turns. Burgeoning is another 1 green enchantment, which allows you to put a land from your hand onto the battlefield anytime an opponent plays a land. And then there's effects like Sakura Tribe Scout, which is seen on a number of different creatures, where you tap the creature to put a land from your hand into the battlefield. Oftentimes it comes with a rider that has to be a basic land. But green is definitely the king of these exploration effects, far and away.
Gotcha. Of all of those mentioned, though, I only actually run 2 of them. Exploration in the deck and Azusa's in the deck. You touched on it a bit before, sometimes you ramp out your lands too quickly and are left with nothing in hand. That's what burgeoning is. So in decks where you want to rush to get your commander out, decks that play, I'm gonna run green Eldrazi, and you've got Ulamog in the deck or Kozilek in the deck or something like that, where you just want to ramp to something giant or something larger than command zone, burgeoning works. But in decks like this, where I want to have landfalls, I want to hit them on time, but I want them to be impactful. So playing a burgeoning early on, emptying the lands out of my hand while I've got nothing to essentially justify them being there, doesn't help me. Sakura Tribe Elder is something that's kind of on the radar going into Omnath, possibly. But right now, with as Korvold is, and I'm already constrained by, the number of slots in the deck as it is, Sakura Tribe Elder hasn't exactly made the cut for that. But there's something to be said for effects like that over burgeoning, where it is a kind of controlled and one that's just, one-off. It's like, hey, I can get a Sakura Tribe Elder, I can put one additional land into play, either on my turn, opponent's turn, something of that nature, as compared to burgeoning, vomit my hand onto the field, and then I've got nothing.
Yeah, burgeoning tends to see play and be a lot stronger when you are also playing a little bit more of the group hug strategy, just where you can keep everybody's handful and then always get the payoff. So even if you're hugging everybody, you are also getting ahead of them at the same time. So what kind of payoffs are we looking at in green that you're currently running in your Korvald list?
The biggest one is, the all-time champion of it, it's Avenger of Zendikar, which, comes into play, makes a bunch of plant tokens equal to the amount of lands that you have, and then whenever land comes into play, those tokens get larger. And that's probably the penultimate payoff card you can have for this, because it rewards you not only for having a bunch of lands in play, but it rewards you for playing more lands. So if you cast it on curve, you get your slew of tokens, and then you play a normal land, and they're now 1/2s, or you play a fetch land, they're 2/3s. And those effects, I mean, it's not a per end of turn, they're just +1/+1 tokens on it. So Avenger of Zendikar just takes it to where it's easy to cast, as it's mono green, rewards you for ramping out already, and then also rewards you again for playing lands. That's kind of where you want to be.
Right, and compare it to a card like Rampaging Baeloths, which came from the previous set. Yes, it's cheaper at 4 and 2 green. Yes, it gives you bigger tokens, these big 4/4 beasts, but it doesn't reward the setup that you already had with it. And I believe you're not currently running that one in your
I
Korvald
am not.
list.
And you also don't get something for it immediately. So Rampaging Baeloths comes into play, and then unless you have a fetch land in play already, it can be killed before you get any advantage of it. At least
Right,
when.
or you already have another land drop waiting to go for it, as I alluded to earlier.
Yeah, but unless you. Avengers Zendikar comes down, even if it gets killed, you still generated tokens. Now, some landfall decks, or some decks that focus on lands, like, okay, you get a whole bunch of 0/1 tokens, you get a bunch of chump blockers, so it doesn't really amount to much. In Korvold, what it translates into is cool, I have all of this fodder that I can now sacrifice to Korvold and turn into card draw. We'll get a bit into that when we come into like the pros and cons of like Omnath versus Korvold when we get there.
Exactly.
And the last.
But I think there's another one that I think you're running in Korvald the last time I was trekking, which does not say landfall on it, which is why you've always got to do your searches properly.
Indeed, Tireless Tracker is the one we're referring to. And Tireless Tracker is incredible in what it does. So Tireless Tracker, and this one I'll actually go into detail about because it's worth noting, is 3 mana, 2 generic and a green for a 3/2 human scout. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, investigate. Investigate means put a colorless clue artifact token on the battlefield with 2, sacrifice this artifact, draw a card. Inconsequential line of text, whenever you sacrifice a clue, put a +1/+1 counter on Tireless Tracker. That is a moot point in this deck. What it cares about, though, is whenever a land enters the battlefield, generate a clue. Note, it doesn't say landfall. However, it is essentially landfall.
That phrase, whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, is what we're looking for. So, kids, remember, if you're going to do a Scryfall search or a Gatherer search, you want to look at the Oracle text for whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control.
Gotcha. And Tireless Tracker does a multitude of things for Korvald. Starters, it generates a token that in and itself draws a card if I choose to pay 2 and sacrifice it. With Korvald in play, it draws me 2 cards, one from the sacrifice clue effect, one from the Korvald effect of sacking a permanent. In mono green, on the opposite hand, you still have a way to generate card draw in a color that traditionally does not have access to card draw. Yes, it can
Well,
be
it doesn't
mana.
have access to unconditional card draw. Usually green says we got to have a creature on the battlefield to take advantage of. But Tireless Tracker says it doesn't matter, even if all your creatures get wiped out, you can start cashing in all the mana you have, to turn into card draw later with these clues.
And that's the big thing here, is it says all the mana you have into card draw later on with these clues. It's unconditional, the fact that you're expected to have a ton of mana green. Like, that's what you want to do. So having this restriction of, oh, we have to pay 2 mana to draw this card, you're going to have an abundance of mana. And that's just going to be there. And it's not something that has to be on your turn. So, you know, you play a bunch of land out, you hold your spells, and if, you know, nothing comes up to where you need to use a piece of targeted removal, anything of that nature, at the end of an opponent's turn, you sink your mana into sacrificing these tokens and drawing a bunch of cards, reloading your hand for your next turn.
I don't think we're surprising anybody when we're saying that green is the foundation for any Lands Matter type deck. But red has really only come onto the scene recently as being such a critical part of a lot of these Lands Matter type decks. Now, on one hand, red doesn't really bring a lot of ramp to the equation. They bring a lot of, I guess, ritual type spells, as we've seen with a certain Neheb. But generally, they're not known for their landfall. Now, there are a couple of exploration effects that come out of red, like Mina and Den Wildborn, which is from Battle for Zendikar, and as a green-red creature, it's a 4-4 and allows you to play an additional land on each of your turns, and then allows you to bounce a land back to your hand to essentially give a creature trample until end of turn. I don't think you're running this one in Korvold currently.
I am not. The spaces got a bit too cramped for that. The only red cards that are actually in Korvold at the moment, I think, are only three. And that is obviously Angry Omnath.
Old Angry Omnath. So let me pull up Angry Omnath here so I can read it in all of its glory. Omnath, Locus of Rage, is 3/2 red and 2 green for a 5/5 legendary creature elemental with landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, put a 5/5 red and green elemental creature token onto the battlefield. And whenever Omnath, Locus of Rage, or another elemental you control dies, Omnath deals 3 damage to target creature or player. Mm. And the updated rules text on it is any target. So you can also bolt a planeswalker.
And unlike the new Omnath, it's not limited to 3 land drops.
Oh, no. If you were to have Omnath, Locus of Rage in play and manage to vomit 15 lands onto the battlefield in a turn, enjoy your 15 5/5 tokens.
The other red card of the deck is Nesting Dragon, which is a commander exclusive card. 5 mana, 3 generic and 2 red for a flying dragon with landfall. Whenever land enters the battlefield under your control, create a 0/2 red dragon egg creature token with defender. When this creature dies, create a 2/2 dragon creature token with flying and fire breathing, which is one. This creature gets +1/+0 until end of turn.
And if anybody here is from the good old days like we are, you may recognize Dragon Egg as actually being literally Dragon Egg, which did exactly that. When it died, you got a little dragon whelp. Ah, the good old days.
Alright, one of the cards that gets the chopping block, however, from the switch is a standard favorite, Mayhem Devil. Mayhem Devil is one of the all-star cards in Rakdos Sacrifice, making its way through Standard right now. It is a 3-mana creature, a generic 1/1/1, and whenever a player sacrifices a permanent, Mayhem Devil deals 1 damage to any target. So, the big thing for this one is, it says, whenever any player sacrifices a permanent. In Korvold, I'm doing a lot of sacrificing. So the incidental ping is a big thing. Sacrificing fetch lands, ping something. Opponent sacrifices a fetch land or sacrifices something to their own Korvold, ping something.
Or sacrifice a clue, or sacrifice a lotus petal.
Or sacrifice anything.
Yeah, sacrifice Sakura Triad Elder. That card sees plenty of play.
The problem is that Mayhem Devil is really good when it comes down early and can help you police the mana dorks and all that that most decks tend to run. Later on, however, when it comes into play, you're maybe getting a damage to your hero off, unless you can do something cute by giving it Death Touch, where you start machining the board down with just ping here, ping here, ping here, and then everything dies. It doesn't do much later on, and I'm not running any effects that do that in Korvold at the moment. It's a really cool card. I played it in Standard when I played on Arena. I will not, however, be sad to see it go from this list, though.
Well, I guess that brings us to our next point, then, where we're going to talk about black. And that was the color that a lot of people had been eager to see added into the landfall format, and why everyone was so excited when the Commander 2018 decks came out. Or was it 2017 with Ward Windgrace? I don't remember offhand.
Before we dive into black, though, there is one all-star in red that kind of went under the radar. However, it is an absolute staple in any deck that runs landfall. And we are, of course, talking about our favorite 2-mana, 3-loyalty Planeswalker,
Renin 6.
So Renin 6 has 3 abilities, like most Planeswalker, unless you're Jace or one of those walkers from War of the Spark. The one we care about here is the +1. Return up to 1 target land card from your graveyard to your hand.
To be fair, Renin 6 is really only powerful when you are building a really efficient deck. You have to be running fetch lands to take advantage of it, or you have to be having a sacrifice sub-theme going on, which in Gruul, in green-red by itself, is not always the most common thing. But obviously in Korvald, being in Jund, as we're going to get to in black, black loves the graveyard just like green, and Renin 6 is more than happy to go digging around in the graveyard with that +1.
Renin 6 cares about 2 cards only. Wasteland and Strip Mine.
Those do make Renin 6 a lot more oppressive. That is absolutely the case. But even without those, just replaying a fetch land every turn essentially means +1 draw a card that is gas for the rest of your deck.
And one of the things that kind of makes it, like in the formats that see Renin 6 see play, Legacy and things of that nature, being able to deal 1 damage to any target is a big thing for them. And then ramping is a big thing from in those decks. 1 damage to any target, if it's not early game and you're not picking off dorks, doesn't really mean much, because you can't give a Planeswalker Death Touch or anything of that nature to where you can start picking off things. And by the point later on in the game, well, you've got lands, so returning 1 land card from your graveyard to your hand doesn't particularly matter as much. In this specific deck, the ultimate is -7. You get an emblem with instant sorcery spells. Cards in your graveyard to have retrace.
Which is kind of awesome, but I've never seen anybody actually pull it off before.
Exactly.
As with most ultimates.
So it's one of those things where it's incredibly powerful to get Renin 6 down early. And if you land him later on, then it's incremental value that, for the most part, people just aren't going to care about, because it doesn't really do much.
While true, there's also a lot of metas out there. Ours is not one of them, but there are metas out there where people tend to hesitate to attack one another, but are more than happy to say, oh, well, he gets a Planeswalker. We got to kill it, obviously. I think War of the Spark has probably overall loosened some of that a little bit for people, where people are not as likely to just dive in after a Planeswalker. But if you're not prepared to defend your walker, it still is value that you're leaving on the table. And the other advantage, though, I think that we almost missed in red is that red has haste enablers. Not always as critical in landfall, because you're not as reliant on dorks, as we talked about before with Elf Ball, but haste is good.
It is.
Haste is really good.
Rhythm of the Wild, I think it is.
One, a green and a red, creatures, spells you cast have Riot, where you either put a +1/+1 counter on them or give them haste, and is it also creature spells you cast can't be countered?
Exactly, yes. Rhythm of the Wild. One of the best Gruul cards to come out in a long time for EDH, at least my humble opinion in regards to that. It does not have a slot in Korvald presently, as Korvald, for the most part, is more land focus. At last count, it's running 38 lands in there. It does have the dorks that exist in it for the purpose of ramping up. The big thing behind that, essentially, is I want to make sure that not only do I have my lands in hand, I still actually want to cast my creatures.
And so importantly, you want to cast your Korvald.
Exactly.
So why don't we get to the big Jund fun then? So when in doubt, we get black in there, we Jund them out. So black doesn't add a lot of ramp to it. In general, black's ramp tends to be greedy. It just wants you to be playing black. Like, Liliana of the Dark Realms can fetch you swamps, but you're probably not going to be fetching too many swamps outside of a mono black deck. It does have a powerhouse in exploration effects with the Gitrog monster. I'm pretty sure you're running in Korvald at the moment.
Absolutely. Gitrog ultimately is going to be the one card I'm going to be sad to lose the most. More so than Korvald, because Gitrog does exactly what it is I want it to do. But it's... I don't know, it's hard to make one card make the decision for the entire landfall theme.
Right, so for those who are unfamiliar, the Gitrog monster is 3, a black, and a green for a legendary creature, Frog Horror, a 6-6 with Death Touch. At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice the Gitrog monster unless you sacrifice a land. You may play an additional land on each of your turns. There's that exploration clause. And whenever one or more land cards are put into your graveyard from anywhere, draw a card. So really, just Korvald's best friend all around. Get the additional land drops, enable more landfall triggers. Oh, and when you happen to crack a fetch land or feed a land to Korvald, get paid twice.
And there's some other ones. In terms of utility, Korvald himself is an engine in value, but so is Skitfrog. Similar to that vein, though, we have Dark Confidant, which fits, I want to say, relatively well into the deck.
With a high land count. So Dark Confidant is one in a black for a 2/1 human advisor. At the beginning of your upkeep, reveal the top card of your library, and you lose life equal to the converted mana cost of that card. And as we know, lands have a converted mana cost of 0.
Exactly. So that is one of the things to where, for the most part, it turns into, I get to draw next card, hopefully it's a land. Sometimes, though, I can, you know, hurt myself pretty bad, as one of the more expensive cards that exists in the deck is actually a mono black card. And that is War of the Spark favorite, Liliana, Dreadhorde General. Now, Liliana is a 6-mana planeswalker, 4 generic and 2 swamps. Her default vanilla text is, whenever creature you control dies, draw a card. So her and Korvold go hand-in-hand perfectly.
I can just picture Liliana and Korvold skipping down the beach hand-in-hand together now.
She trades thanks Nicol Bolas.
Yeah, thanks for that. Thanks for that mental image.
She trades Nicol Bolas for Korvold, one dragon for another.
She never learned from her first mistake.
So her plus one is create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. So she comes in at 6 loyalty. The plus one puts her to 7 and gives it a way to defend itself, which is pretty much the dividing line is whether or not a planeswalker is good or not. Can it protect itself?
Right, right. And even at 6 mana, 4/2 black, that's not too bad.
Not her minus 4 is each player sacrifices 2 creatures. Once
Korvald,
again,
this... if Korvald had ears, they'd be perking up right now.
Exactly. So in Korvald speak, if you've got Korvald and Liliana out together and you minus 4, sacrifice 2 of those aforementioned plant tokens that your Avenger of Zendikar created, you're essentially drawing 4 cards. 2 off of Liliana and 2 off the Korvald trigger. And life goes on. You're not losing anything. You're utilizing creatures as resources, was what this deck wants to do.
Right, and those are more payoffs that you're seeing for Korvald as opposed to the true quote unquote lands matter theme.
And that's actually the big thing here for it is Liliana has absolutely nothing to do with lands.
Right.
She can utilize some of the things that lands can do in regards to, hey, here's an Avenger of Zendikar, here's a bunch of plant tokens, I'm going to sacrifice them, opponent, get rid of 2 cards that matter to you, I'm going to draw 2 cards, 4 cards with Korvold off of these little plant tokens. Adversely, if I have Omnath out, sacrifice 2 elementals with Liliana, I'm drawing 4 cards, I'm hitting something for 6.
Right, which every step along the way, it's just good. At the same time, though, we have definitely seen that there are some other payoffs, which I don't remember if you're running in Korvald or not. So the first one is Dread Presence from Core 2020 last summer. The 3/3 for 3 and a black creature nightmare. Whenever a swamp enters the battlefield under your control, choose 1. You draw a card and lose 1 life, or Dread Presence deals 2 damage to any target and you gain 2 life. I can't remember if this was in Korvald or this was in your Yarok list.
It was in Yarok. It is not in Korvald. I do not run enough swamps in there to essentially justify having it. Things like Dread of the Elysium Groove can make all lands types. But if I went that route, I'd also be priced into doing Urborg or, you know, and then Phyrexian or Cabal Coffers to try and do something like that. It's just more than what I wanted to do.
Right. In general, black is a powerful color, and it does have a lot of powerful payoffs for landfall. Like, I believe you actually turned Jake on to running Obnixilus the Fallen. 3/2 black for a legendary creature demon 3/3 with landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may have target player lose 3 life. If you do, put 3 +1/+1 counters on Obnixilus the Fallen.
Yeah, Obnixilus is stupid good. It simply says, exist, make landfall triggers, kill your opponents.
One way or the other, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It just turns into such a big threat that eventually they're either going to have to answer it, they're going to have to chump, or they're just going to get drained out to the point where even if it doesn't get too huge, they're going to lose anyway.
So you play Obnixilus and a single fetch land, and you all of a sudden have 6'd somebody, and then you also have a 9/9. I mean, that's that. If you have an exploration effect, all right, cool. So that let's just double that. You know, let's, you know, 12 everybody and make Obnixilus giant.
Yeah, as the format has become more efficient and more optimized, you've definitely seen creatures shrinking down and getting smaller and smaller. And one of the lessons I've learned from playing in CADH is that sometimes just having the stat line of big is enough for a card to wind up being relevant, especially if you're on a game plan like most landfall decks are, where you're focused on value and you want to drag the game out. Eventually, he's going to be unstoppable.
Definitely. And then black also comes with its suite of just good card is good. Things like Demonic Tutor, Entomb, Reanimate.
Yeah, just Victimize is the best ways to use the graveyard, the best ways to tutor in general. And I don't believe you're running much of a heavy dredge package, apart from freaking all-star Life from the Loam, which we should probably read while we have a chance. Alex, you do the honors. I know how much you love this card.
So I'll go on record with saying Life of Loam is my favorite Magic card. I've enjoyed it since the moment I've read it. It feels good to cast it. You never had to have Life of Loam. It is a 2-mana sorcery, 1 and a green. Return up to 3 target land cards from your graveyard to your hand with Dredge 3. For those unfamiliar with the Dredge mechanic, if you were to draw a card, instead put that many cards from the top of your library into your graveyard and return this card from your graveyard to your hand. So, what it turns into is, I play Life from the Loam. I get 3 land cards back from my graveyard. Fantastic. It's now gone to my graveyard. I want lands. This deck wants lands, but it also has the package of Reanimate and things of that nature, and another fun Dredge card that exists in black that will sadly be going away, is Golgari Thug, which, fun fact, when it dies, I can put a card from my graveyard on top of my library.
So a creature card, but still, yeah.
So things in the yard aren't bad in this case. So I sacrifice some lands, some fetches, I get some basics into play, and then I dredge. Life of the Loam comes back to hand, and lo and behold, I can mill over 3 additional lands. Well, fantastic. I'm going to pay 2 mana, I'm going to take these 3 lands to my hand, and then rinse and repeat. Life of the Loam is absolutely busted in decks that want it.
Yeah, even if you are getting 0 lands back, oftentimes it is correct to just cast Life of the Loam just to get the engine going. Being a dredge card, it is basically immune to counter spells that aren't going to exile it or tuck it. It's just amazing. And the reason I'm bringing it up as we're talking about black is that, as you mentioned, the other advantage in black is that black really cares about the graveyard. And if you're looking at a deck like Korvold, where your goal is to just try to take advantage of lands however you can get them, black plays along really well with effects like Crucible of Worlds or Ramanop Excavator, or one-shot effects like Splendid Reclamation or World Shaper that can get large numbers of lands back from your graveyard into play. Yeah, I've seen some sick plays from your deck when you've suddenly gone, well, I only have 10 lands in my graveyard right now. Oops, now they're all back. And importantly, cards like Life from the Loam, Crucible of Worlds, and Ramanop Excavator overcome one of the disadvantages we often see with landfall decks, where if you're not utilizing all of your land drops in a turn, you are falling behind in more ways than one. These cards allow you to take advantage of lands that you've either sacrificed or cracked, like a fetch land, to gain advantage out of previously, essentially allowing you to draw a virtual card for the purpose of turning on all the other engines in your deck. Black is probably the best color to pair with green for this particular interaction.
Definitely. And one card above all kind of symbolizes that relationship in regard specifically to Korvold in a Lands Matters deck. It is a favorite of mine from Visions and the Squandered Resources.
Oh, Squandered Resources. So good. Go ahead and read that one.
Squandered Resources is also going to be a card that unfortunately has to leave the list if I go to Omnath. It is a 2-mana enchantment, 1 black and 1 green. Sacrifice a land. Add 1 mana of any type the sacrifice land could produce. That's it.
That's amazing. It does not say sacrifice an untapped land. It says sacrifice a land.
Tap a land for mana. Sacrifice it. Add a land it can control.
Again, so. For you, for anybody here who played back in the day, this was one of the unsung heroes of the old Prosperous Bloom deck, one of the first true combo decks in all of Magic.
So, one of the old payoffs that was in the deck before revamps was a Torment of Hellfire, which now is in my XX Hydra deck because, you know, XX. There was a game, though, I played when Jake was visiting, and it just went tap a bunch of lands, squandered resources, sack all those lands. Here's a giant Torment of Hellfire. Can you survive this?
It's a fine question to ask people when you have a bazillion mana, which a lot of landfall decks do tend to have by the end.
Only downside to this is you invest heavily on it. So you sacrifice all your lands. You hope that whatever you have to get them back does not get countered, or else mm-hmm. you're starting off at turn zero. You might as well just pack them up and go home there.
Hey, high risk, high reward is its own sort of fun.
Exactly.
So we talked about a lot of the cards that are foundational to what you've already done with your Lands Matter deck. We talked about some of the cards you'd be giving up for a switch from a card like Korvald to a card like Omnath. Why don't we pivot then and look at some of the cards you may be gaining and start talking about, I guess, the blue cards.
Definitely. So when I think about switching and giving up black and then adding the benefit of green and blue, the first question is, like, you know, why? Black is powerful in and of itself.
So right, right.
The first thing that comes to mind when making that trade of, hey, what value am I losing versus what value am I gaining, is obviously Tatiova, Benthic Druid.
Oh, Tatiova. Remember, she's only an uncommon. She's not that good.
Yeah, the uncommon that should have been a rare. So, Tatiova is what I view as the kind of sort of replacement for Gitfrog, and the opposite of that, instead of whenever you sacrifice a land, it's whenever you play a land.
Let me read Tatiova for us then. So Tatiova, Benthic Druid, is 3, a green and a blue for a legendary creature, Merfolk Druid. She's a 3/3. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you gain 1 life and draw a card. So this is probably the card more than any other, which taught people that you probably should be searching not for a landfall, but the phrase, whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control.
Yeah, so it's here, play a fetch land, net 1 life, draw 2 cards. And in the vein of things that are blue and things that are green and things that are merfolk, another card that exists and a possibility in Omnath is, of course, Thrasios, Triton Hero.
So Thrasios himself doesn't really have any payoffs. So Thrasios is a blue and a green for a legendary creature, Merfolk Wizard. It is a 1/3 and has the ability to pay 4 generic mana to look at the top card of your library, or wait, to scry. Scry 1, and then reveal the top card of your library. If it is a land card, you put it into play tapped. Otherwise, put it into your hand. Yeah, he's good. He is a cornerstone and backbone of so many different CEDH decks because he is just an outlet for oodles of mana.
Exactly, and that's one thing that Korvald struggled with, is it could generate tons of mana. But a lot of the payoff cards and synergy revolved around getting those lands from your hand into play and then triggering the landfall effects. Once they were there, though, there wasn't really much to do with them other than increasing your engine so that on your next turn, when you did the repetition of landfall and things of that nature, there was a greater return on your investment in terms of lands. But once they were there, didn't really do much other than whatever utilities your lands have.
Yeah, which is kind of ironic because you would think that a deck that is ramping super hard would be looking for those big mana payoffs. But ironically, landfall is generally free. Once you play the land, you get the effect for free. So just having the engine online often means that you don't have the mana, you need a mana sink to use all your mana for.
Korvald does lack a bit in the way of, okay, I've got all these lands, what am I going to do with them? One of the appeals of going to Omnath is that it gives me something to do and helps me reload my hand. So, if I'm vomiting all my lands onto the field, I want a return, essentially, on that investment. In this case, that would be Thrasios. Worth noting, though, new Omnath also kind of rewards that to a degree. New Omnath is essentially when I play a draw card. So it's not the same, but those landfall triggers are getting me a wide spectrum of things. I'm, you know, able to ramp and cast out, you know, creatures that cost 5 mana by simply playing a land drop with Omnath's second ability. Gaining 4 life is incidental, and then dealing 4 damage to other creatures I control is also incidental. That'd be super broken if play a fetch land, this is number 3, for you. other land comes in for you. That gets a bit out of hand. But alas, that's not the case. But blue does make a strong presence in terms of why I want to sit there and include that to the deck as compared to Corvold. Blue staple all-star in VDH. Rhystic Study is just a way to kind of refill lands and all that. Of note as well is Trade Routes. So Trade Routes is an enchantment. It is one in a blue. And it's got some fun lines of text on it. One being, return target land you control to its owner's hand. And then another one, discard a land, draw a card. So I can put a land from field back into my hand, recast it, it triggers my landfall triggers, or if I'm running low on interaction in terms of what I can do in my hand, but I've got something, say, Crucible of the World, or I have enough Excavator in play, I can bounce back to my hand, sacrifice it, draw a card, and then replay it. So it's a fun little engine piece in and of itself. Other cards exist like that as well. Overburden and Mana Breach. Those appear more in shells that care about restricting your opponent's game plan while breaking parity. It's actually a lot of what the Yarok CDH deck is based off of. However, that's not necessarily something that this deck is trying to do. Thrasios provides a way for me to do something with that mana once it exists in the field. Cards like Overburden and Mana Breach both exist in the format. They're staples of the Yarok CDH deck, where you want to sit there and tax your opponents and also break parity.
Right.
While the deck can break parity through effects like that, the spell slots want to be utilized for other things, I think. It's not really something I'm necessarily looking for.
Okay. So in terms of other payoffs, are you running effects like Hedron Crab, the 0/3 one drop in blue that mills for 3 when a land enters the battlefield?
No. 3 is too small of a number. In standard or limited, oh yeah, I will be drafting crabs whenever I see them, because I want to play lands. 40 cards are a lot easier to mill through than 100. So.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, and that brings us to the strangest color in Landfall. White.
Well, it's still the fifth best color.
White has kind of pseudo-ramp effects in the way of land tax and Weathered Wayfarer. Weathered Wayfarer is definitely not something we want. Land tax, however, is something we do.
Yeah, a lot of people would look at land tax and say, an enchantment for one white mana, during your upkeep, if an opponent has more lands than you, you get to tutor up 3 basic lands. But only if an opponent has more lands than you. And they're going to say, how is that valuable? You're the ramp deck. How are you going to have fewer lands than somebody?
Realistically, in the first turns of the game, I'm not going to have a ramp engine in play to make that happen. Unless, you know, the turn one exploration is there. That being said, if I have a turn option between a turn one exploration and a turn one land tax, I'm going to turn one land tax. Because I want to guarantee my land drops going into the future turns, not needing to get a second one out now.
And last time I checked, playing one mana to put 3 lands into your hand was Ancestral Recall, which is pretty good. So what other cards seem valuable? What's pulling you into white?
Right now, in terms of landfall and lands kind of matters, the next one would be Emyria Angel. Just a 3/3 flyer for 2 generic and 2 white. Landfall, whenever land is the battlefield, create a white bird token with flying.
Now, you're not as interested in tokens as part of your engine when you're looking at Omnath versus... Omnath versus...
Corvold.
Right.
I'm not, but at the same time, the deck needs to have ways to kind of finish.
Okay.
Where before I had things where I have a super powerful engine in Corvold, in Obnixilis, in the Gitfrog monster, in Liliana. Those avenues no longer exist. So
okay.
I have to look for the win, essentially wherever I can grab it. So the engine is only part of it. The, you know, finishing the game is a... is another portion of it. Emyria Angel's evasion and flying and their tokens evasion and flying allow me to sit there and get some points of damage in, and hopefully it becomes relevant later on. And before I touch on things that kind of make that matter, we get to what I think is the most exciting card in green-white, or in white, I should say, but it
All
is
right.
a green-white card going into Omnath, and that's actually Knight of the Reliquary.
Oh, man, this card is something else. I love it.
So Knight of the Reliquary first made a name for itself way back in Alara in what was considered zoo decks back then. So you ran Knight of the Reliquary, you ran Ranger of Eos, and then you ran a whole bunch of Wild Nacatl, Loam Lions, and Curdapes. And you would just loot them away, draw lands. It was a whole bunch of stuff.
Right.
Knight of the Reliquary is a 3-mana creature, because I haven't thought about it in a while.
Yeah, Knight of the Reliquary is 1, a green and a white for a 2-2 creature human knight. Knight of the Reliquary gets +1/+1 for each land card in your graveyard. Tap, sacrifice a forest or a plains, search your library for a land card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library.
Indeed. So, one of those effects already exists in the deck in the form of Elvish Visionary. Nope, not Elvish Visionary, Elvish Reclaimer. It is a 1-mana 1/2 Elf Warrior. It gets +2/+2 as long as there are 3 more land cards in your graveyard. That's cool, doesn't really matter. It does have 2, sacrifice a land, search your library for a land card, put onto the battlefield tapped, then shelf your library. Not as good as Knight, not as good as Knight of the Reliquary, much cheaper than Knight of the Reliquary.
Mm-hmm. Comes down much earlier, so by turn 2, you're probably ready to start activating it. Knight of the Reliquary also has the limitation that it has to sacrifice a forest or a plains. But as you already mentioned, green does not really have a hard time making sure you'll have a forest or a plains you want to sacrifice. Number one, you're probably base green anyway, so you'll likely have lots of lands that are incidentally typed as forest that you're able to throw away as you need to. Number two, you do have the option of leaning heavily on this if you really want to with cards like Prismatic Omen or Dryad of the Elysian Grove to just turn all your lands into all basic land types anyway.
Or, you know, Ashaya, Soul of the Wild.
Oh, that's right. We do have some new toys coming out that make this deck even more interesting. So I think this one is officially previewed now, right?
Yeah, so now we're getting into the meat and potatoes. Now we've talked about landfalls, we've talked about the color pies. Now the real question is, why one versus the other? And this is something I've been, you know, mulling over since, you know, the card was spoiled. So the biggest con in the entire thing is just losing black. And what does that mean? It means losing Obnixilis, it means losing Korvold, it means losing Liana, Squandered Resources.
It means losing Jake's friendship.
He'll survive. What it means, essentially, is losing value. A lot of the things that black brought to Korvold was that I sacrifice a land. Instantly, I get to draw cards. Or I get the 2 different cards.
Yeah, Korvold is undoubtedly one of the most powerful value engines ever printed.
Gotcha. So, it begs the question, why Omnath? So, trading one color for 2 colors seems like a decent deal in my book. But the deck has to undergo some changes in order to be functional. So, if we want to stay base green, so even though it's a 4-color commander, what does my mana base want to look like? And how much of that mana base do I want to dedicate to lands versus creatures? So, one of the biggest things I lose in black is I lose access to cards like Dark Confidant, which allow me to get card draw later on, and I also lose access to Elves of Deep Shadow, which is one of my ramp cards. It's just a green elf, it's a mana dork, taps are black, I lose life.
Okay, so let's look at this piece by piece then. Losing Bob, Dark Confidant, is certainly a blow, but fortunately you're going to be pivoting into blue, which is not going to be short on ways, even reusable ways, to be able to put cards back into your hand.
Yes.
I think I would be happy with the trade-off, even if all I was doing was trading Bob for Jace Rin's Prodigy or something like that.
The thing is, so black does card draw, and while the downfall is normally life, it's normally compact and concise in what it does. Blue has card draw. It has it up the wazoo, because blue wants to draw cards. However, not all of them are created equal. So in terms of, I'm giving up Bob and efficient card draw in black, what do I get out of it? Realistically, the only 2 cards I care about are Tattoo of a Benthic Druid and Rhystic Study, as it's really the only thing that's giving me that fits what this deck wants to do.
Right, right. So in this case, you're less concerned about the 2-mana slot. You'd basically be swapping Gitmrog Monster for Tatiova, basically 1-for-1. Sure, Tatiova's not going to beat as hard, but she's going to draw you just a monstrous ton of cards.
Exactly. And then Bob turns into Rhystic Study. We lose Elves of Deep Shadow, but we gain 2 specific new cards. Noble Hierarch. Goes without saying.
Mm-hmm. So that's going to fix most of your colors. If you happen to be swinging in with Omnath or any of your giant beaters, Exalted gives you an extra +1/+1. I love the Cheerleader of Paradise. Costs a green, taps for a green, a white, or a blue.
Yeah, now that it's 4 colors, like, you're priced a bit, I'm priced a bit more into having dorks that tap for a bit more than that. So Faber Eldo is another card that's probably going to make the list as well.
So Faber Elder is from Throne of Eldraine. It is a star, where star is equal to the number of lands you control. Is that it? Or is it a 1-1? I don't remember how this one works.
I think it's a star one. I think it's star one. It's a 0/0 with vigilance. It gets +1/+1 for each common permanent you control. Tap, add a color for each permanent from mana that you control.
All right, so you got that. So I guess that means you're on Bloomtender too?
Bloomtender's being in. So one card that does not exist in Korvold that we talked about earlier is Rhythm of the Wild. Gives creatures haste, makes them uncounterable. In Korvold, where it was just three colors focusing on predominantly green and then, you know, black and red where needed, the deck now is probably going to be looking at more colors. In terms of late game payoff, white is a bit more prevalent than black was in the Korvold list.
Mm-hmm.
So having mana drugs that can't be countered and also tap the turn they come in is huge, especially with cards like Faber or Elder or Bloomtender, where they'll more than likely tap for multiples. If Bloomtender comes in with Rhythm of the Wild in play, I'm tapping for 2 mana off the bat. If it comes in with Faber or Elder in play, I'm tapping for 3 mana off the bat. So that is something hopefully to smooth everything out.
Okay, so what are you going to do with all this mana?
So that leads us into what we essentially landfall effects versus what we have in play.
Right.
So Thrasios is definitely a plan to actually have in the deck to kind of use that mana for.
Just sink 4 mana at a time into Thrasios and either put the cards into your hand or put lands onto the battlefield. Either way, you're probably pretty happy.
Exactly. Now, Zendikar Rising adds a whole slew of new landfall cards that make it a bit more appealing to go the Omnath route as compared to Korvold.
Alright.
One of them being is a new Minotaur legend from Zendikar Rising called Morag, Fury of Akum. It is a 6-mana 6/6, 4 generic and 2 red, for a legendary Minotaur warrior. Each creature control gets +1/+0 each time it is attacked this turn. Nothing super fancy.
So, very least, it's giving your creatures a +1 power whenever they attack.
Yes. Landfall. Whenever land enters the battlefield under your control, if it's your main phase, there's an additional combat phase after this phase. At the beginning of combat, untap all creatures you control.
All right, so you're going to go wide, have an anthem effect built in, which gets bigger the more times you drop lands. Okay.
So, and then multiple attack effects. So land into the battlefield after you control. If it's your main phase, there's an additional combat phase after this one. One land gets you an extra combat phase. Multiple lands get you multiple combat phases. This cycles back to what was making Mirror Angel so appealing, is those little 1/1 birds with an effect like Morag in play all of a sudden become 2/2 birds, 3/3 birds, 4/4 birds, so on and so forth, to where they are evasive in the air. So you can have a clogged battle state, have an Mirror Angel in play, land the Morag, drop 2 fetch lands, have 4 combat turns. Let's see what happens when the dust settles.
Yeah, and that point then, on the first combat, they're swinging in as 2/1s, already doubling their damage. On the second, we're looking at 3/1s, and that's with 1 land drop. If there's a second land drop, or if you play and crack a fetch land, yeah, going wide seems like it'll be much more viable here than you were able to do in Korvold.
Yeah, and that's essentially what it wants to do in this case. One of the big questions, and it's kind of a head-scratcher, is, okay, so if this is ultimately going to be the game plan, landfall into, I can get into something that generates tokens, and then kill somebody with Morag, or Morag effects. Do I want to run cards like Doubling Season, Anointed Procession, and things of that nature to where I have more tokens? Right now I'm saying no.
Then you're looking at 2, maybe 3 slots. You're looking at Parallel Lives, Anointed Procession, which are basically the same enchantment, 3 in a colored mana, green or white, to whenever you create a token, you create an additional copy of that token every time. Then Doubling Season, then Doubling Season is just another enchantment for an extra mana that adds the rider of putting double the counters on permanents. So then you're looking at cards that only do work after you already have your payoff cards already set up. And
it's not really worth it.
Yeah, that's a lot of moving pieces. I would be a lot happier using those slots on effects like Rhythm of the Wild, just so I'd be able to take advantage of more of my creatures every turn that I'm playing.
What could be kind of a compromise that only occupy one slot, though, is a Rise of the Redeemed.
Okay, Rise of the Redeemed, your old favorite. I'm pretty sure I had this memorized from all the times you punched me in the face with it. It's hybrid green or white mana for a 1/1 elf warrior. Then its ability is hybrid green, white, tap, create a token. Or, no, it's two and a hybrid, tap.
It's 3 mana and 6 mana. So hybrid for 3, tap, create a 1/1 elf creature token. Hybrid for 6, tap, double the amount of tokens you have in play.
Okay, so especially if you have haste enablers, then it's not inconceivable that you're dumping your extra mana into Rice every turn anyway. And then, even if you draw them late, it's simply 7 mana to double your tokens.
Yeah.
Especially if you have a haste enabler, you just swing for the fences. Yep. So then, is it worth it to look at more haste enablers in the deck? Or ways to get your haste enabler more reliably?
Honestly, probably not. It's a cute idea, but I think it takes the deck in a direction it doesn't necessarily want to go in. It still wants to focus on landfalls, and landfalls just kind of get you there. Because then it's, okay, land a Rise. Okay, do you have haste? Okay, no. Protect Rise. And Rise is essentially a dead card if you don't have tokens in play.
But is that even really true? Like we said, even then, it's not really a dead card. We said that landfall decks want mana sinks, right? And I think you've more than proven over the years that Rice is a perfectly serviceable mana sink.
He is, but that's if you build around him. It's like, hey, you're tapping every turn. You're utilizing that. The turn he comes down, he does nothing. And the second turn you have him, if you've got nothing in play, he creates a 1/1. So there has to be more to him. In my old Rise of the Redeemed deck, the entire deck revolved around supporting him, which is why it was so explosive. But playing him into an empty board and getting one elf warrior token before someone else kills him, because it being a 1/1, doesn't seem like I'd want to bet all on that.
Now, but I think there was another card earlier that we were talking about, which was a card we were going to talk about when we were talking about Knight of the Reliquary, which seems really neat, and that is Ashaya, Soul of the Wild. It is 3/2 green for a star legendary creature elemental, where Ashaya's power and toughness are each equal to the number of lands you control. Now, where it gets interesting is the next line, where it says, non-token creatures you control are forest lands in addition to their other types. They're still affected by summoning sickness, but all of your non-token creatures now tap for green. So, no, you can't go through those Earthcraft lines, which let you use summoning sick creatures, but if you start to look at Retreat to Coralhelm plus Knight of the Reliquary, in that combo, Ashaya lets you sacrifice non-token creatures to go up almost exponentially in mana while ripping lands out of your deck, period.
Yeah, like I said, Ashaya is probably not going to make the list, but it's a cute one. Also, something else that was really making me think of my old Tati Overlands deck, which should have really realistically been Tati Overturns, but I think it is a 3-card combo with Retreat to Coralhelm, Patron of the Moon, and something like Sakura Tribe Elder, or Sakura Scout, where you tap a land to put it into play.
Then let me read Patron of the Moon in that case. Yeah. So this is a card from all the way back in Betrayers of Kawagama. Patron of the Moon is a 7-mana, 5/2 blue for a 5/4 with flying. It also has Moonfolk Offering. If you don't know what Offering does, then buckle up. It reads, you may cast the spell at any time you could cast an instant by sacrificing a Moonfolk and paying the difference in mana cost between this and the sacrificed creature. Mana cost includes color. So it's a little like Emerge from Eldritch Moon. Now, I don't think this is going to be running a lot of Moonfolk in your list, but you're probably looking at it for the other ability it has, which is to pay 1 generic mana to put up to 2 land cards from your hand onto the battlefield tapped.
Yeah, so there's just some... I mean, it's not going to go in this build because it's way too convoluted. It was something between this, Retreat to Coralhelm, Amulet of Vigor, and Sakura Scout, where you pretty much just looped lands indefinitely.
Yeah, I think without lands like Mystic Sanctuary that you really want to loop, it's probably a little too cute. Now, another blue flying creature you might want to consider that might be too cute is the original Kefnet. So Kefnet the Mindful is 2 and a blue for a legendary creature god. It is a 5/5 with flying and indestructible. Kefnet the Mindful can't attack or block unless you have 7 or more cards in hand, and then has the ability for 3 and a blue, draw a card. Then you may return a land you control to its owner's hand.
Indeed.
Again, it's a mana sink. Yes, it's worse than Thrasios, but it does let you pick up your lands again if you really need to trigger more landfall, and it's still an evasive beater when it's time to close out the game. And it's still a way to draw cards.
Yeah, and there are land cards. If you've been tracking anything in like Magic Finance or cards that are spiking, Oboro, Palace in the Clouds, is a legendary land, taps for blue, and has the fun clause of 1 generic mana, return it to your hand. It's just 1 bounce to hand. So if you were just looking for landfall triggers, you play it, you tap it for blue, you pay for the bounce trigger, and if you've got 3 landfalls, you just play it 3 times. And then you've got 3 landfall triggers.
Yeah, that's not too shabby. It's better than the good old days or the bad old days of having to do that with, oh god, was that Ghost Town or something?
Is the other one where you can only do it on opponent's turns, though.
Yeah, it was sort of weird freaking card. Timberlock was so amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
You also have, so effects like that though work. Trade Routes, which you mentioned a bit earlier, has a similar effect. And one of the cards that probably will make the original cut of the deck is a Royal Elemental, which is just a 6 mana giant elemental critter. It's 3 generic and 3 blue. And essentially whenever a land enters battlefield with landfall trigger, I get to take a creature.
Not until end of turn.
I just get to take it until Royal Elemental dies. So if it dies, the whole plan is shot. But if you don't have removal, you know, it can do something. So it's like, here's a Royal Elemental, here's a fetch land. I'm going to take your Korvold, I'm going to take your command over here. I now have all the cards. Oh, how the turntables have turned.
That is easily a win condition in and of itself. So at this point then, you have some really strong payoffs. I would be pretty comfortable saying that Royal Elemental slots in place of Obnixilus at that point.
Yeah.
The only downside to it is the 3 and 3 blue and the mana cost. That is a huge, huge ask. And
it's a big ask.
Yeah, and unlike in Korvold, you can't cheat that. You can't just pull it out of your graveyard with reanimate or something like that.
No. So one thing, you know, it's one of the more well-known landfall creatures is Lotus Cobra, which is getting a snazzy new reprint this time around. The big thing about Lotus Cobra that made it so appealing is its landfall trigger. And I gotta scroll down to it because...
Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool.
It seemed a little unnecessary in Korvold, regardless of how strong it actually is. Because of the restrictions of mana colors in this deck, however, Lotus Cobra does look like it's probably gonna at least see some play in some version of it.
Yeah.
In regards to just helping to smooth things out.
Yeah. And as we discussed when Omnath was first spoiled, like we first talked about, I sort of compare Omnath to a Lotus Cobra in your command zone, but potentially even better.
Yeah. So it's worth noting that if you have a turn 1 Lotus Cobra, or turn 2 Lotus Cobra, and you have a exploration effect in play, and you play 2 fetch lands, you can cast Omnath out of the graveyard with those 2 lands.
Out of the command zone.
Out of the command zone, yeah. So it's
without having to tap the lands you just fetched. That is simply with landfall triggers.
Yeah, so it's kind of silly in that regard, but it's like, hey, turn 2 Lotus Cobra, turn 3 here's the exploration, fetch. Here's my commander. Sure. Here we go.
I think our magic number for mana sinks is going to be 4, just because of the way Omnath works, with spitting out those 4 free mana for your second landfall trigger every turn, and having the ability to cash that in with something like Thrasios, or something like that, consistently, that seems like a really good place to bank your mana.
And Omnath's ability to generate mana off its second landfall makes it so that you're not necessarily pressured to dump your entire hand out at once. So, yeah, you want to ramp and get those landfall triggers, but if you're playing an extra land this turn because you want to get closer to casting X creature, well, a landfall trigger and an Omnath ability going on the stack will obviously, I mean, let you cast that creature that you want and then hold lands back up for the next turn. It's also not specific to your turn. So you have your 3 land drops on yours, you know, fetch land, basic. All right, you've done 3. Now, it's your opponent's turn. Crack, crack. Gain 4 life. Generate a bunch of mana. Counter whatever it is you're doing. Or something of that nature.
Or even throw it to Thrasios or throw it to Kefnet.
Yeah.
I really would not mind saying, hold up your fetch land right now. Crack it on your opponent's turn. Crack a second one. And get a bonus Thrasios activation.
Yeah, so it's, and then the 4 damage is kind of incidental, but it adds up. That being said, it does police other planeswalkers that show up without having to actually attack them. So it's like, oh, okay, well, you've got a planeswalker.
Yeah,
I'm just going to do what my deck does incidentally for the controller for the planeswalker.
Poor Renin 6. We hardly knew ye.
Yeah. So cycling back to newer cards that are kind of hopefully making their way in, it is a new version of an old one, Scoot Swarm, which is a updated version of Scoot Mob. Scoot Swarm is a creature. It is a 3 mana, 2 generic, and a forest for a creature insect. Landfall, whenever land enters your battlefield under your control, create a 1/1 green insect creature token. Kind of in line what we wanted to do with Emiria Angel, take advantage of it with Morag. What makes this worth it, though, is if you control 6 or more lands, once again, landfall deck, super easy to do, create a token that's a copy of Scoot Swarm instead. So
yeah, I said before, I'll say it again, I really love this weird little insect design they've done a few times, looking at cards like Giant Ataphage, where you're just having fun making copies of copies of copies. You just go to town.
And so if this comes in late game, and you already have 6 lands in play, and you've got some lands in hand, you drop it, you play a land, let's call it a fetch, you know, now that there's so many of them fluttering in between fetches, Prismatic or Vista, Fabled Passage, there's a ton of ways to sacrifice things. Play a fetch, sacrifice it. It creates the 1/1 token, and then you also get a token of Scoot Swarm. Land comes in. All right, here's 2 1/1 tokens, here's 2 more copies of Scoot Swarm, so on and so forth. If you've got something like Rhythm of the Wild in play and something like Morag in play, well, now you have Insect Army. Go.
They don't really have any evasion to speak of, but if you go wide enough, and yeah, the card basically says it'll go wide enough, yeah, that could be really fun alongside that Minotaur you mentioned.
And if it goes wide enough, it's like, alright, so there are 2 ones off the bat. Okay, so you attack smartly, you lose some of them. Okay. So hopefully you manage to take something down, you trade a Scoot Mob for a dork or something. Sure. Hopefully some of them survive. Great. Now you go into your next combat phase. Well, now there are 3 O's. So there are 3 ones. So let's hope something happens here. But eventually, like, there's going to be so many of them that at some point damage has to get through.
Very true. Now, are there any other cards from the new Zendikar spoilers that are pulling you more towards Omnath as opposed to the old Korvald deck?
There are 2 specific. Now, one just gets ultra good in Korvold as compared to just good in Omnath, but it still loosens the blow a bit. The first one is Nahiri's Lithoforming. It is a sorcery from Zendikar Rising. It is X and 2 red. Sacrifice X lands. That part is what is doubly good in Korvold. As it's,
oh, yes.
It's like, hold on. Sacrifice X lands? Done. The other half of it is for each land sacrifice this way, draw a card. Okay.
And then Korvold says, have a second one. Buy one, get one free.
Exactly. So if you sacrifice 4 lands, you're drawing 8 cards. So that's value upon value in Korvold.
And then?
And then you may play X additional lands this turn, where equal to the lands, or X additional lands this turn, equal to whatever the cost of X is. They enter tapped, which is not so fun.
But is it good enough to replace Scapeshift?
Scapeshift is staying in the deck too.
And I don't think we actually covered what Scapeshift does. So Scapeshift is a sorcery for 2/2 green. Sacrifice any number of lands. Search your library for that many land cards. Put them onto the battlefield tapped. Then shuffle your library.
So Nahiri's Lithoforming is probably going to end up replacing Scavenged Resources.
Squandered Resources.
Squandered Resources, yeah. Not the best trade-off, but at least it is kind of modular.
Which, right.
I guess, works in this case. Like I said, it's not as good in Korvold as it is, or it's not as good in Omnath as it is in Korvold, but it does lessen the blow of losing Squandered Resources.
Yeah, and I think with Nahiri's Lithomancy, it's important to point out that outside of Korvold, there's not really any deck where you're expecting to come out ahead on lands. You're going to come out behind on lands after casting it, but ideally you're going to have more gas and be up on cards at that point.
Yeah, and you know, one of the cards that was in the original Korvold list that came from the Amulet Bloom deck that saw tons of play in Modern is Amulet of Vigor, which was the original core Vorb list. It got cut as the land base became a bit more compact and tight. But with needing four colors of lands now, having to expand a bit, and effects like this where they come into play, Splendid Reclamation is one of them that come in tapped. This, they come in tapped. There may be an argument to be made for Amulet of Vigor to at least be tried in this deck to kind of circumvent that.
And Amulet of Vigor is a one-mana artifact that reads, whenever a permanent enters the battlefield under your control, untap it.
Yep. And then one of the other new cards is a really neat enchantment coming from this set. It's a Valakut Exploration. It's 3 mana, 2 generic and a red. Enchantment, Landfall. Whenever land enters the battlefield under your control, exile the top card of your library. You may play this card as long as it remains in exile. So, it's card advantage. It's card draw.
And then, at the beginning of your end step, if there are cards exiled with Valakut Exploration, put them into their owner's graveyards, then Valakut's Exploration deals that much damage to each opponent.
Yeah, it's... Honestly, the card that strikes me the most that this would be placing in terms of effect is actually Obnixilus.
Okay, I can see that.
Especially if you're in a position where everyone's life totals are low enough and you draw this late game, you just stack as many landfall triggers as you can and then just move to end step.
Which means it actually even lives up to its namesake of Valakut, where landfall triggers just turn directly into damage.
So that's it's one I'm interested in, but it also has one of the things like, yeah, you can bank on that happening, but at the same time, you know, if someone destroys it before your end step, well, then you've just wasted all of those cards. So ideally, best case scenario is you use it to play, you know, whatever additional land drops you can get out of it, out of the yard.
Yeah, or off the top of your library, you know, out of exile, not out of your yard.
Off the top of the yard.
Yeah, it's not a Crucible of Worlds, too.
Yeah, it's... So yeah, that's, and there are a whole bunch of other landfall effects that are in the set, but these are the ones that kind of like stick out. Worth noting, in favor of Korvold. So that being said, like, Omnath is a fun alternative to Korvold, and there are definitely a lot of things that say, hey, you know, take a look at me, I'm Omnath, I'm nuking on the block, and giving access to red or white and blue is fun. But like I said, now here's Lithomancy's super ridiculously strong in Korvold, like it's no one's business. Korvold also gets a new Planeswalker, Nissa of the Shadowed Boughs, and this is one of the earliest cards that was rumored spoiled that I got super excited about. It's a 4-mana Planeswalker, 2 generic, a black, Nissa's new color wheel, and a green, 4 loyalty. It is a Planeswalker with landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, put a loyalty counter on Nissa of Shadowed Boughs. So she comes in at 4, you fetch land, she goes to 6, fantastic. Her plus one, in very typical Nissa fashion, is untap target land you control. You may have it become a 3/3 elemental creature with haste and menace until end of turn. It's still a land. So that's fun. It's useful. It ramps you away. The thing that appealed to me about her, as compared to other Planeswalkers that could sort of fit into a Kobold-like shell, is her -5, which seems steep, but when you consider landfall, it really isn't. You may put a creature card with converted mana cost less than or equal to the number of lands you control on the battlefield from your hand or from the graveyard, put 2+1/+1 counters on it.
So playing again into that Reanimator theme.
Or from your hand.
Oh wow. That's a lot.
It is.
I mean, it's certainly best in the Reanimator theme, but that's so good either way.
It is, and it makes it so, you know, you're tempted, like, you're playing black, so you want to do something with Reanimator-esque effects, but right now, you know, you've got Reanimate and Entomb, which are great in that regard. Nissa just does a lot. So between Vorath Stronghold, Phyrexian Reclamation, and her, you know, maybe I don't need to run things like Golgari Thug or Eternal Witness.
So you can slim things out a little bit, yeah. Now, there's one other card we still have not talked about, which does get a noticeable bump from switching from a 3-color Korvold to a 4-color Omnath. Another card that's really powerful, but does not say landfall on it, even though it basically is a landfall card, and that is Field of the Dead. So, Field of the Dead is a land which enters the battlefield tapped and taps for colorless. Whenever Field of the Dead or another land enters the battlefield under your control, if you control 7 or more lands with different names, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. going into four colors should mean that you should have fewer cards that have the same name as another land. And if you're going wide, that should make it really easy to make even more zombies.
Yeah, it is. So tokens do have a incidental theme that can just kind of random show up in the deck. It's like I'm doing all these landfall triggers. I've got these engines going. So I guess that's the one difference between Korvold and Omnath, is that the payoffs are a bit different in terms of what happens when the landfall triggers happen.
Korvold, it seems more like the landfall triggers are incidental, because you want to make things or get things out that you can then feed to Korvold anyway. In my experience, most Korvold games end with a giant angry dragon dad flying in and eating someone. Now, on the other hand, with four-color Omnath, it seems more like you're working to make sure you get paid and you get your army of tokens from your landfall triggers. You're actively being pushed towards that landfall theme. I guess the interesting question will be whether you have enough ways to get enough buffs in there and anthem up your army of tokens while also still having enough slots left available that you can do all the things that landfall decks need you to do, to ramp, to have exploration effects, and to have enough landfall payoffs to generate the tokens you need to close out the game.
Yeah. So, one thing that makes Morag appealing is that at the point of, the cards that ramp this, that make this possible, turn into threats later on.
That's true. And then losing black, you're losing the best tutors. But then most of the powerful payoffs you're looking at come on creatures anyway. Green, and specifically green and white, are exceedingly good at tutoring up creatures with effects like Worldly Tutor, Finale of Devastation, Call of...
Eladomri's Call.
Yeah, Eladomri's Call. This may even be a deck where you want to look at cards like Wargate. So Wargate is a sorcery for X and banned, that's green, white, blue. Search your library for a permanent card with a governor mana cost of X or less, put it onto the battlefield, and then shuffle your library.
Yeah, the deck doesn't have issues generating mana, that's for sure. And then if, it turns out that there are some key enchantments necessary to make this work, Enlightened Tutor is a card that exists.
Yeah, and I guess you have redundancy with Idyllic Tutor, which had that reprint recently in Theros. So, what do you think you're going to do?
More than likely, I'm probably going to build both. I have my Korvold list together. It's not going to go anywhere, as it's easily become one of my favorite decks right now. So even if I take the deck apart, I'm keeping the list together so I can fall back on it. And, there's a strong case of just sticking in black, just alone with Nahir's Lithoforming, Valakut Expedition, and Nissa. Just those three cards by themselves are a huge power boost to Korvold in terms of what he wants to do, especially Nahir's Lithomancing. But there's right. something appealing about using some of those like older, white landfall cards, like Emiria Angel, Emiria Shepherd, that can kind of seem fun. So honestly, I think I've already committed to trying to build Omnath and playing and see how it works, but I'm probably not going to make the... this is how it's going to be going forward. I'm not going to try and foil the deck out until I know for sure.
Well, then let me warn you that they're going to have showcase art for Omnath, for Lotus Cobra, and for your new best friend Scoot Mob, as well as for Valakut Exploration.
And Morag.
Oh, and Morag too? Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, I may have... So I had a pre-order in for a set booster and a collector's booster. I canceled my set booster and turned that into a second collector's booster. And then just one generic draft booster for cheaper off of it.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what you come up with out of this, Alex. I think it's going to be exciting, and I think it was a really good way to talk about landfall and lands matter in general.
I think my wallet's going to hate me after this.
Well, look at the bright side. There's no way anything else really exciting is coming out this year, right?
Commander's Legends.
Oh, right. And then Commander Spellbook Green.
Yeah, I don't want to talk
about... And then two new Commander decks we don't even know anything else about yet.
Commander Spellbook Green. Worldly Tutor.
Sylvan Library.
Library. That's it. Yeah, just those two.
Yeah, let's not go completely off the rails here. Well, I hope you guys have enjoyed this discussion on landfall and lands matter. We hope you join us next time, and until then, I'm John.
And I'm Alex.
And I'm going to go dig out my copy of Phyrexian Reclamation, so we'll have Jake around for the next episode.
You can reach the crew from Gemstone Mine on Twitter at GemstoneMineMTG, or send us an email at GemstoneMinePodcast@gmail.com. On YouTube, we're Gemstone Mine Podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell.